Welcome to you. This is our 10th session of Creative Industries, and it has a rhythm to it. We investigate city musics, exploring the incredibly productive relationship between rhythm and urbanity. Or to put it another way, we explore the sound of a city. Popular music is many things. There's the music, there's the lyrics, there's the complex relationship between the pair of them. But these texts, these musical texts, also connect with so many other sites of meaning, including album covers, posters, t-shirts, stickers, tour brochures, music videos, DVDs, music magazines, and fan club merchandise. Popular music, as a cultural form, is part of what's called auditory culture, or sonic media. It's frequently portrayed as a soundtrack for urban youth rebellion. But popular music and youth culture haven't always linked together. Broadway and London shows, for example, in the 1920s and the 1930s, had enormous popular currency. At that time, popularity was measured by the purchase of sheet music, not the sale of singles and albums. So the operettas of Gilbert and Sullivan during the 1880s and the 1890s were sung in public. They were sung in the family home. Similarly, popular music during the Second World War, like the big band sound of Glenn Miller, became the soundtrack of people's lives. They sung along, they danced, they fell in love to this music. But too often, this history of popular music is lost. Too often, when the history of popular music is written, it commences with Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock. The reason why it commences here is this is the moment where there's a seamless connection between young people or youth and popular music, or more precisely rock and roll. Through musical history from 1956 until 1987, there was a separation of pop music from rock music. But through the 1990s, that is through grunge, through the house interventions, genres suddenly transformed. Rock and pop music became confused. The boundaries became blurred. So now that we have in place a general history or theory of popular music in the last 100 years or so, let's now add space to the equation and hear the sounds of the city. Right, wherever you are, just sit yourself comfortably for a second and maybe close your eyes. When you think about particular cities, what colours, what sounds, what smells, what textures arise? What is your mental image of Detroit? How is that different from Singapore or Tokyo or Brisbane? There are two parallel movements that are transforming all of our current cities at the moment. Firstly, household sizes have halved. People are having less children. They're not living with their parents. I don't know why. But this means that we're more isolated from other people. Concurrently, there is also overcrowding. Immigration creates movement, it creates diversity, and also the opportunity for regeneration of cities. When cities are compact, they are connected. So while these are quite positive changes in the urban environment, after September 11, global cities like New York and London became places of fear, confusion, and indeed terrorism. The point of globalization is that it renders these enormous global cities homogenized, that is, sites of sameness. New York, London, Paris, Madrid, Tokyo have much in common. And remember, McDonald's exists everywhere. But non-global cities that are often called second-tier cities, that means cities on the second tier, not global cities, these are sites of difference, of places of diverse popular culture and economic development. These non-globalized differences are the foundation for tourism. Now, global cities hold remarkable similarities, guys, but Dunedin is very different from Brighton. These differences sharpen the market. Without different and marketable landscapes and identities, tourism simply cannot function. Similarly, the music industry is based on the categorization of difference through genre, through time and space. So when the rock and pop binaries crumbled and genres bled into each other, journalists and music critics needed new ways to explain the music man. And a shared city in an urban environment became the obvious solution. So this is when we started to hear about Merseybeat or the Sheffield sound. Music has been used without any doubt. Music's been used with great effectiveness to shift how we think about particular cities. And Perth, where I'm speaking now, Perth creative industry policymakers can learn from a lot of these international examples. So cities can be mapped. Global cities, London, Paris, Madrid, Tokyo, Sydney, New York, Auckland, take all the creative, critical, institutional and economic attention. Bands and DJs who are successful in these places are highly visible to policymakers and the music industry. But those not resident in these centres have more time to develop a sound, to develop a skill base and experience without this preliminary pressure. So these global cities share many characteristics. They're often the capital cities of their nations. They feature a very large population base, ethnic diversity, a large spatial spread, intricate transportation networks, and a burgeoning finance and service sector. Importantly too, and I only really realised this in the last year or so, but importantly, the regions around global cities are absolutely sucked of people, of industry, and any self-standing economy. All the talented people are sucked into these global cities. The economic and social scale and size of global cities ensures that encircling areas are often post-industrial wastelands. So from this discussion we've just been having, the strength of second-tier or non-global cities emerges. Located outside of the matrix of global cities, there are advantages in being excluded from the musical main game. Differences develop and quirky specificities thrive. The characteristic of second-tier cities is a more stable and smaller population size, it's more compact, and there's a greater diversity of industries, spaces and immigration patterns. In musical terms, a scene or a sound can develop. It's small enough so it can be branded and marketed. To develop city music requires analytical subtlety in understanding how a sonic environment links with space. The great question remains for us interested in policy about how the conditions for creativity are fostered and how we're able to build economic growth and encourage diversity at the same time. So to foster creativity, like intelligence, requires the making of connections. It is remarkable how often creative cities are also musical cities. Seattle, Austin, Dublin, Dunedin, Toronto, Manchester. A musical environment creates lifestyle options. It creates leisure alternatives for an outward consumerist urban workforce. Remember the crew that drink a lot of coffee? Global cities like Auckland, Sydney, London, Paris, Tokyo, New York, have a lot in common. But if diversity and creativity drive population growth, then it's no surprise at all that it is the geographical margins that create the music.